Would you all please turn and face this way? This evening, we thought we'd start off by looking at the phrase "not to damage the Dharma," and so thought maybe we would get some senior folk or folks who have experience with facilitating to give us a sense about what does that mean, not to damage the Dharma. Michael.
I think this is on topic. You can tell me if it's not. Discussion this morning about not being trustworthy was to me just really incredibly helpful. And I can see a story that wants to talk about, you know, I'm an experienced facilitator, I've been doing this for years, why don't they trust me? Which is the first word.
Right. Who is this person that's talking to me about this, yeah. How experienced I am?
Yeah, uh-huh. And just to really get it, the many levels on which conditioning operates.
Yeah.
And it's you know, if I can just go to that place of, you know, I'm not trustworthy. And if I look at my daily life, I can see that on many levels.
You were just to be honest.
Yeah, I'm not killing people or beating my kids. But if I watch how my attention is directed and I'm distracted and...
Well, that's a good way to talk about it, too. Your attention is being directed.
Yeah.
And it really, that's all it really takes, isn't it? To get us off.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the idea of being watched by practice. You know, of course, somebody inside doesn't like that.
Right.
I wonder who.
Right. That's probably the experienced part. Why do they trust me?
Exactly. Uh-huh. But if what I'm going for is participating in practice and I'm willing to give myself to the guidance of practice, then I want to be watched.
Right.
Because... I'm not trustworthy. And when I'm in relationship with practice closely, the way we are as facilitators, it's just really helpful to be watched. Mm-hmm. You know, because I'm always getting good information.
Yeah, there's always a good information. There's always a mirror up to whatever it is that we do.
Yeah, yeah. And it feels like the information I get is always kind. Mm-hmm. Even if somebody doesn't want it, it's always kind. And it's really always really helpful.
Yeah, because it's actually supporting who you really are, not some, you know, whimsical voice that says, well, you know, let's just get on the floor and do a guided imagery all of a sudden. You know, I've never done one before, but I've seen folks do that, so try it out.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
And so, you know, a little flag goes up for you. It's like, hey, you know what? That's what I'm watching out for. This is the untrustworthy part, you know, and it's so easy because that's something that just occurs, you know, and we follow a voice like that, you know, that has the idea or whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And so to me all of that speaks to not damaging the Dharma.
Yeah. Thank you. Jen.
So this is a gigantic topic, and I hope we'll, you know, the guy is going to join us tomorrow, and I hope we'll have a chance to look at this, because I think she speaks to it in a way that's just very eloquent and important. And I was looking at it actually around some of the things we've been talking about, no reviews, no self-hate, and how true and critical that is, that we don't indulge self-hatred after facilitation, and how It's also true that we have an enormous responsibility mm-hmm. when we're on the cushion.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, we're representing practice.
Mm-hmm.
In particular, we're representing this practice mm-hmm. when we're on the cushion. And that just by that very nature, we have a huge responsibility. I don't know how else to say it.
Well, the phrase that keeps coming up for me as you're saying is not to be an undue influence in anybody's life.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. And that there's great potential for that
mm-hmm.
when we're the facilitator.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a place where I was just looking at how it could be like two sides of a duality. So there's,
right.
Oh, I can't believe I said that. I can't. That was so unskillful. So there's the self-hatred side of it. The other side of it is, it's fine.
Right.
It's completely okay, and we're all just move on and good.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
I'll just say whatever.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, because I know that they're adequate. I know that I'm adequate. So
right.
It doesn't really matter.
Yeah. And yet, everything that happens has a big impact.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was looking at that today...
It's that karma bead.
It's the karma bead.
Yeah. There's no escaping karma
in all of it. Yeah, that's right. And I don't know if I can put words to it when you just said that there's karma in everything.
Exactly.
There's karma in everything. And getting up there on the cushion and representing practice,
mm-hmm.
yeah, that's huge.
Yeah,
you know, that's huge. And so, as I was looking at it, I was remembering how Sherry will talk about how when she was first facilitating teaching, and someone would come to her and like bring a whatever, an issue, a topic, a
mm-hmm.
something that she, I don't know, the way that I hear it when she talks about something that she hadn't seen for herself, hadn't looked into,
mm-hmm.
and that her kind of vow to herself was, she would never be asked that again without having looked into it.
Mm-hmm.
And what I hear in that is a huge commitment to the practice of what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that it feels like the reason we facilitate is that we get to a certain place in practice and we realize that practice is our lives.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we want to do. We want practice to be at the center of our lives. And the only way to do that and to take it that deeply into our lives is to facilitate.
Mm.
And it feels like in order to do that, what's required of us is to give it everything we've got.
Mm.
So when I realize that I've done something unskillful,
mm-hmm.
it's like that little vow to myself.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you know, this is my project. How did that happen? What was going on? And in a way that doesn't allow the self-hatred, because that's, like you were talking about this morning, that's going to block any information.
Exactly. There's no insight that's going to come from that, because it's only going to come from something that's not even looking at... It's actually a way to avoid looking at the very thing that I need to see in that.
Yeah. In fact, that would be damaging the dharma.
Yeah. Because it's just a setup.
Yes.
I'll just do it. It'll just happen again.
It'll just happen again, because then I just stay in the place mm-hmm. of I'm a bad person and I should be a good mm-hmm. person. But was just being shared, it's not about that.
Right.
You know? And that's where it comes from. I don't want to be watched, because it's painful to be watched, because it's hard to get information. But if I realize the tremendous responsibility I have in coming to the cushion, then I really want to be watched.
Yes.
I really want to be watched, because then I get support and assistance for representing practice in the way that it needs to be represented.
Yes, and that's what the watching is. It is a support.
Yeah.
And the conditioning can't stand that, because it's being scrutinized.
Right.
Or, you know, it wants to do what it does secretly
mm-hmm.
so that it doesn't have to be exposed to the light of day for what it is, and so we have an insight about, hey, this is the thing that I need to see.
Right.
And the support is in the you know, Michael talked about not trusting, you know, not trusting himself, that is turning your life over to guidance,
right.
You know, which is what, you know, when you come to train at the monastery as a monk, that's what you're essentially signing on to. It's like, you know, what I was doing out there just wasn't working. And so for me to just go back to, you know, this boss, you know, and say, you know, okay, I can do whatever they say, but this is really the thing that I'm turning to.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, ouch.
And that's true. I hear in that. That's true, how the trustworthy thing is really kind of the crux of it, because, I mean, all of us who come to practice obviously have some realization, like you're saying, of getting it, that what's in control of my life is not working.
Right.
It doesn't have my best interest at heart. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, I mean, all of that. And so realizing that, I don't know, you know, I need some assistance with that.
Yeah.
And so same thing in facilitating, you know. I can't become in charge of my facilitation.
Right, I can't be.
Right.
Linda.
Well, it's such an incredibly rich topic, and it feels like one of those that I think we need to schedule a section of every facilitator's retreat to look at this, because it's not, for me, it's not one that has answers or that has rules or that, you know.
It almost
has,
feels like preceptish.
Huh?
It feels preceptive.
Yeah, where we can look at it and see more and probably every time I look at it, I see more in terms of in relation to my own facilitation and sort of in relation to facilitation generally.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things I've been looking at is there's being on the cushion and doing reflective listening and missing a few words.
Right.
And knowing that that's going to happen.
Right.
That's just going to happen. And, all right, we work with that. And then they're sitting on the cushion and being identified and not knowing it, which is a place of really great danger in terms of how I might be interacting with the person that I'm facilitating. And for me, it just sort of underscores that it's really about practice. It's really about we are devoted to practice, and it's practice that will guide us to be able to be there and be trustworthy.
Mm-hmm.
And continuing to practice. Because when I'm identified, it's what can happen is that I can collude with someone else's conditioning. I can kind of go in there and respond to them or react to them, which is what I devoutly don't want to do and certainly have done.
Uh-huh.
And the more I practice, the less chance there is of that happening, especially when I'm on the cushion.
Uh-huh.
So I just...
Did you want to... I'm just wondering, as you're talking about, if you have an example of what you mean by, you know, being identified and interacting...
Having a conversation with someone, you know, facilitating someone, and then moving to a place where I get really irritated with them or something.
Right.
And having that irritation show, or responding from that irritation.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe their thing is, oh, God, I always make people really ticked off. And then I'm there in that place in their karma, kind of reinforcing it. Instead of being able to be the mirror that can just let them find for themselves what that karma is all about.
And that's what an interesting place is. As you're talking about that, it reminds me, that's why we always talk about reflective listening as being so powerful and as a place to go to. If I suddenly have this arise in my head, like they're so irritating, it could be my flag that, you know, there's something going on here.
Yeah, that's great. And this is a good time just to go back to reflective listening, because otherwise the next thing that comes out of my mouth may be seriously unskillful. And I think the thing Jen was referring to that Sherry had said is I don't want to be anybody's reason for coming to practice, mm-hmm. and I don't want to be anybody's reason for leaving practice. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. it feels to me like that points at this same... And again, it's not about we got any kind of rule book that we can look to, and it's just about everybody facilitates, has their experience, mm-hmm. keeps looking, keeps mm-hmm. learning, keeps accepting guidance.
Mickey.
Well, what I was looking at this morning and what this conversation is bringing back up for me is that the words that come to me is that being on the cushion both requires and evokes a great deal of humility. And it's humility in a way in the face of the Dharma and the practice and the people that come to it. Because I can't really sit there on that cushion and think that I know anything. And which is really hard for conditioning because, you know, I come from a string of professions where I was in front of the classroom, the congregation, the meeting, mm-hmm. and I was supposed to know what I was doing there. Mm-hmm. You know, there was no one, I was not being watched, which in a way is really pretty scary. You know, I mean... I went through processes to certify me to be in that role, but once that was accomplished, no one ever checked. Mm-hmm. And I'm up there doing God knows what. I mean, I think I did a good job. But it didn't... it doesn't necessarily prepare me to facilitate. Because they're such totally different things, and conditioning thinks they're the same. Mm-hmm. Because I'm somehow in a different role than the other people, and
right, you're set apart.
Right, but it's very different, and so that word humility just mm-hmm. comes up. So I have to be willing to sit up there and be watched and know that I'm, you know, even after having done this for a while, that I'm still new at it, mm-hmm. that I still don't know, mm-hmm. that I may never know mm-hmm. in that sense of how right. conditioning wants to know.
Yeah, on the opposite side of you were expected to know,
right.
and once you knew, no one watched.
Right.
Here, you don't know, and you're always wanting someone to be right. paying attention, then you may right. never get to a place where right. you get anywhere with it or right. know anything.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you know, it's just it's helpful in not damaging the Dharma to know that I know so little about the Dharma. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have to be in beginner's mind in order not to damage it in a way, because if I get to the place where I think I know something, I'm dangerous.
Yeah, it's back to that I know something.
Yeah.
You know, I facilitate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it is dangerous, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, when we first were offered, you know, the possibility to facilitate, there was someone who thought, oh, good, you know, big stuff, you know.
Right.
Someone who wanted to be a facilitator.
Uh-huh.
And I got over that. I really did, because that wasn't going to happen in that way that I wanted it to happen, you uh-huh. know. So now it feels like the only thing I bring to wanting to be on that cushion is the willingness to practice and to mm-hmm. see where we go.
Yeah. 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 That this is practice.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's sort of no illusion that it leads anywhere.
Right, which is the same as what happens in practice.
Right, which is back to, for me, that word humility. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, I'm doing it. I'm willing to show up there and do the best I can. And then I get up and leave, and it doesn't mean anything about whether I'm even ever going to be back there again.
Right. It doesn't mean anything.
But I have to be there in the way in which, in a way in which I will always be there.
Yes. Know? Yeah, it's back to that. You know, you must work as hard as you possibly can.
Right. But you
as diligently as you possibly can, knowing that the very act of doing that will keep you from getting what you want.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thank you. Dave.
Well, what I've got with it is a couple things. It's just, I like that word grave, the grave precept.
Yes.
And this is another occasion for that word. The grave responsibility of representing practice. And for me, it's just from the love of it, as people saying. You know, it's something that sort of, I think, a miracle that happened 2,500 years ago, that this came into being. I mean, I was there before that, I think, too. But and then it's been carried along by person after person after person with the integrity to really see what practice is and then be able to carry that to the next generation.
Yeah.
And, you know, I really appreciate that people did that.
Yeah. Just with such care, you know, that people went through and did that to pass it along from generation to generation to generation, from person to person to person.
Mm-hmm. I like that word care, actually, because we need to take great care, I think, as we do that ourselves.
I'm just looking at your shirt, and as you're saying that, that's the only thing that I can keep seeing is that it just keeps getting passed along that way. You know, and we wouldn't want to damage it because it's damaging, you know, the heart.
Yeah, and when I look at it, like from my own personal experience, I mean, I in my little career so far as a facilitator, I mean, I've done some pretty outrageously bad things from an objective point of view. Unskillful, rather than bad. That's not a good word for it, but unskillful. I mean, I can see that, and yet when I look at it, I feel like the whole time my intention has been pure. And the reason, I mean, there's been all kinds of voices and stuff and resistance and everything else too, but I know that because at least so far, I've always been willing to accept the guidance that came by. And what that tells me is, beneath all of the conditioning that comes up and all of the unskillfulness and the unpleasantness is a willingness to really do practice as deeply as I know how to do practice in any given moment. And somehow that makes the whole thing make sense, including the things that I look back on now, go, geez, I can't believe I did that, kind of things. Because the way it seems to me is that it really isn't about the content. You know, it really isn't about, was that interaction skillful or not skillful?
Right.
It really is about the, are we really modeling practice or not? You know, so for someone who has as their first priority to awaken and end suffering and clean up the stuff that's in here and not bring that to, you know, like in this case, to a facilitation experience, that's someone who's modeling practice, no matter how it looks on a given day. As opposed to someone whose motivation ultimately is, I want to get my needs met through this thing. And I think that's the umbrella that all of the unskillfulness falls under. I want something for me out of this, out of this facilitation. You know, I want to feel like I want to be good, you know, at this. I want people to admire me. I want to be helpful.
Yeah.
You know, I want to, you know, all those kinds of things.
Yeah, that's just what was occurring to me, too. It could even take on the guise of, I want to do it for others. You know, and it's just, it's the I want to do it for. It's kind of like what was pointed at. This means something now. I'm going someplace. All that's when you were talking, that's the umbrella that I saw that under what you're talking about, the umbrella.
Yeah, I think so. Well, there has to be a there truly has to be that commitment, and that's a rare thing, I think, is for a human being to truly have a commitment to in suffering over to get what I want. Mm-hmm. And you know, in the past, there's all the, you know, 3 days out in the snow before they let you in the monastery,
right,
you know, to demonstrate that commitment. And it's interesting because I've been looking a lot in terms of our program that we're doing here. We've been talking some amongst ourselves here about the sustainability element of it. And I've talked to people who are in the program, and it's obvious that it takes a huge commitment to participate in this program. Yeah. You know, because there's a lot, because we require, you know, a bunch of listening buddies, you know, we've got the conference calls every week, we've got the group itself every week, you know, mm-hmm. we're asking people to come here on retreat. It's a major commitment. And to me, what I've been seeing as I'm looking at it is that's really important.
Yeah.
Because what that demonstrates, somebody who's willing to go through those steps and really show up for all of that, it would be really hard to do that without a real commitment to, you know, to ending suffering, and rather than just trying to get something for me, because it's just, you can go out and get something for me a whole lot easier than doing all
that. That's for sure, yeah. Yeah. I think there was even something in one of the books by Sherry Roach, like, what have you got here for me? Because if this doesn't give me eternal salvation, there's another tradition just down the street that I can go to.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's tricky for people who are living in the world, what we're talking about, because at the monastery, it's actually pretty simple.
Right.
If your feet are on the property, you're willing.
Right.
Basically.
Yeah.
As long
you're
as
showing
there,
up.
And out there, I think it's different. You know, it's, and I really don't know. I mean, I've been out there a really long time, so I don't know what it's like for people. But there's not that immediate. You know, here it's obvious whether or not that is your first intention, because that's the only way you can survive in this environment for a long time. Out there, you know, you can fake it. You can tell stories, I imagine. You can tell stories about how that's what you really want, but not have a mirror to really show you what you're actually doing.
Yeah, and it's actually harder, I would imagine, in some ways, to get that kind of feedback and that kind of I don't know. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it probably is. And so it just seems important that we all really get how serious this thing is, mm-hmm. and how serious it is to be someone's opportunity to end suffering. Mm-hmm. That's not the right way to say it, because that implies something for me, but that's not what I mean. It's like to be in the role of one who can provide this for anyone who needs it. Just how incredibly serious that is, and how much that responsibility requires an attitude to the mind that says, I need to always be looking to see what's going on, and I need to participate in practice, so I'm always having a mirror in front of me, so that I can, to the best of my ability, truly represent practice in a way that I know is necessary in order to offer it to another person.
You know what? I think we can go on for a long time on this topic, and I know that when you said that Sherry would be here next day, so that we would have more of an opportunity to go over that. But we do have other things that we wanted to cover tonight. So I thought that we would start in with the next part, which is a question: what is reflective listening, and what is it not? Michael?
Well, speaking from my experience of reflective listening, it's dropping judgment.
Dropping judgment.
Yeah. And because I can't, if I'm judging, I can't reflect. So it's not judgment. And it's being willing to let go of what I think I'm supposed to be, mm-hmm. in order to give back what's being given to me, mm-hmm. through communication.
Yeah, it's your opportunity to give back what's been given to you through communication.
Yeah, so it's an act of generosity, and it requires the humility that something that I have isn't more important than what is coming from this other human being.
Yeah.
And what is important is respecting the other human being, and doing that through reflecting that person.
Yeah, that through reflecting that other person, it's respecting them because it's not coming from you, it's coming from them. That's coming. Where the humility is.
Yeah, because it's coming, because yeah, what I'm viewing, my act of generosity actually comes from that. And the judgment part, the dropping judgment part, I haven't been able to do it without dropping judgment. Or I'm aware that if I do it, I am in that act also dropping judgment.
Yeah.
So
as you reflect, you drop the judgment.
Yeah, because I can't, what the other person is giving me can't come through me if I'm judging
right.
it.
Yeah.
So
that's how the judgment gets dropped, because in order for you to be able to reflect, it has to be dropped.
Yeah. So, and it feels really good.
It feels really good.
Yeah.
Thank you. Jen?
You know, given that this is a pretty experienced group of folks with reflective listening, I wonder if we might broaden it out and open it up for folks to kind of talk about what questions they have arising about reflective listening, or as they're doing it, what's coming up for people, you know.
Okay.
I mean, we did some of the more of the internal stuff earlier today, but kind of the, on the...
Just the nitty gritty, huh?
What's coming up for people around it? What questions arise? You know.
Uh-huh. There was Dave.
I got one, just a little bitty one. That it's not necessary to say everything back to the person.
Mm-hmm.
I think, well, often that's the confusion people have. Uh-huh. Actually, it's kind of gets in the way.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Right. Especially if someone's, you know, talking about. You know, who they met in town, and on, they drove to this place that had this particular laundry soap that they liked, and it was called Sudzo, and you have to reflect all that. Was it Sudzo or was it Taito? You know, so it's a bit distracting.
Yeah, it is, to feel like you need to say something back. So, yeah. You know, you can hit the highlights, you can just say back the last few words. It's really handy if you lose focus for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Can't remember what the heck they were saying.
Yeah.
And, you know, just the last two or three words is plenty.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times I've just, I felt like I was carrying it for a long time. And then as they're winding down, it's like, oh my God, it's all gone. Every last bit, I don't even know what they're talking about. And then they just say the last thing, like, oh, it's so hard. I just say, oh, it was really hard. And psh, right off to the races, like nothing ever happened. I was like,
ooh. One of the things I love about reflective listening is that if you reflect inaccurately, they'll tell you.
That's and the best feedback.
Or you say, I can't remember that, and they'll say, oh, well, it was, you know.
Uh-huh.
It's so self-correcting.
Yes.
And so it's almost hard to get in the way if you're just truly reflecting back.
Yeah.
And the other thing that that strikes me about it, that I really appreciate about it is, you know, as somebody who does live in the world, there is so little intent listening that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even an expectation people have that they'll actually be listened to.
Right.
And,
that's not part of what we do.
Yeah, or that there's any reason really to listen to what the other person's saying. Mostly we listen for our cue to come in with our
right. What are you saying about me?
So, you know, it seems like it's a really simple thing, but it's hugely powerful.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know how many times I've been reflected, and in the reflection I hear what I have not heard in myself yet.
Yeah.
All the times I may have told me that story. I haven't heard what I just heard reflected back, because I haven't listened to myself with that kind of
Yes.
Intentness. And so it's a gift we give one another. It's huge.
Ability to have that reflected back to us, and we catch for ourselves the things that we're not paying attention to that come out of our mouths.
Yeah, and what just occurred to me too, as I was thinking about this, is when we talk, when we speak out, you know, in the world, most of the time, it is a conversation, and so I say this, and then you say this, and then I say this, and then you say this, and it's all building to it. So my, what I put in is the next piece, what I think is the next piece, but in reflective listening, we're not doing that. Uh-huh. We're just repeating back.
Yeah.
And so all the movement can come from the other person.
Yeah.
And it's a whole different, our whole relationship to that listening act is totally different.
It's just completely different. I mean, I just totally saw that the way you were pointing at it, is that
I'm not the next building block.
Exactly. Yeah. You're not. You're part of whatever. It's really relevant to like what Michael was saying. It's like you're just reflecting back out of, you know, it's a generous act, and it's also something that's not very common out in the world, because we're all trying to build on. Building, you know, you say this, I say that, and it's like whatever it ends up looking like, God knows sometimes. But what reflective listening is that it's always about whatever is coming from that person.
Right.
You know, it's just it's like a mirror.
Right.
I don't know, it's the best way to see it. Yeah. Tracy, I'm gonna come back over here too. So I seem to be like down there for a while. So I'll just come back up here. But Tracy.
One thing that it's not, my experience is one thing that it's not relating to another person. And maybe tying in with what Michael was saying, you know, he used the word judgment, but I would say you can't have any filters there. Mm-hmm. And I had an experience in the Reflective Listening Buddies program where my buddy would say back to me what I said, you know, a similar gist, but changing the words to words that she could relate to. And it was so fascinating because I thought, like, wow, I think this is basically what most people usually just always do, but you never actually really hear back what it is.
Uh-huh.
And just how quickly something can get so turned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it kind of sounds similar to what you said, but it really is just so
right, just
novel.
So out there.
and it just made me realize I think that's more of just the norm, and that to really take aside that there's an I to relate to you.
Yeah.
Putting, you know, totally that, getting rid of any I that can relate to this other human is an incredible, it's an incredible gift.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Because that's just so common. I mean, that, you know, I'm going to figure out what you're saying through my filters.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say it, and then you get to see how it is that they're off making something else
just
up.
In their totally own world. Like,
yeah.
They just took what I said and thought, oh, how can I relate to that? Oh, it's kind of like this, huh? And it's like, no, it's not. It's not what I said. So just it's not relating.
Yeah, it's not relating, and it's not the gift that it can be, because... Mm-hmm. It's not reflecting you, not who you are.
Yeah.
Or you're not being heard in that. You know, you're hearing what they heard and what it is for them, or what they think it might be.
Yeah, which I think is kind of what's just normal and just the everyday world, but it goes on without people verbalizing it.
Yeah.
Which is why I think that this practice is so incredibly sick. You know, I don't want to take a word where it's just so. You know, there's been so much talk about really trying to keep it as, you know, pure and not damaging the Dharma. And
certainly
that's one great way to damage the Dharma is in that.
Yeah, that's what was occurring to me. It was like, you know, people just interpreting all sorts of stuff and then believing it to be true. Do you know what I mean? Like how different religions get formed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, gosh, how did they get that from what I said? I don't remember ever saying anything like that.
Yeah. It was so, so amazing. There's a little girl in my life that's just, this, no, hopefully I'm staying within contact, but who's 10, and she's really into going to church, and so we've been meeting at this Presbyterian church, and we were talking to the minister and about this whole thing, and he's actually really curious about my awareness group, and so we were talking about that a little bit, and he said, I wish I had the opportunity to ask people what they heard me say. My little deal. And he said, I bet you I'd be astounded. talented to you if people actually really like heard me say. And I said, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's that, yeah. So that, again, the whole keeping the darkness, we're giving people the opportunity to really get direct feedback as to what's going on instead of just listening to me, and then they get to take whatever they want from that and go on into their own little world.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. I promised, Catherine.
reflective listening is not facilitating, and we all know that, but interestingly enough...
Did you say reflective listening is not facilitating?
It's not facilitating in the sense of leading someone and drawing them out, or reflecting back. I've been facilitated during calls by other facilitators. Which was really interesting. And instead of repeating what I said, the person said, a part of you feels, and I said, I didn't say a part of me, I said, I. And I.
Who you are is that part.
right. And I don't want to be facilitated on reflective listening call. That's not what I sign on for.
Right, yeah.
I sign on to be reflected.
Right,
and,
not to.
And
not
I was. I was identifying with what Michael was saying because I felt a little disrespected.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'll figure this out.
Yeah, right.
But this happened more than once with when I buddied up with another facilitator.
Huh.
In the facilitator's training program. Uh-huh. I think they just kind of maybe do it automatically or something. Uh-huh.
So instead of directly reflecting you, they're doing something different.
Right.
Okay.
Right, and or leading, or
which is another way that it could be. Well, you got a sense for it for yourself that you're not, that there's something going on here. Like there's an agenda. I'm projecting what you're saying is that they're not actually listening to you. Like you said, it just feels disrespectful.
Right, it does because I'm expecting to be reflected. I'm in a group where the person's a facilitator and not going to be facilitated. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's just, I think it's also, when we were talking about relating, it's also just being willing, really willing to just be with the person wherever the person is. And I know that's getting kind of almost in facilitating, but I remember one time speaking to my buddy. And I was being reflected, and I was in this really, this place of real frustration. And I wasn't suicidal. I was frustrated. I think I got that across.
Mm-hmm.
And I said,
so many words.
Right. Uh-huh. I mean, I don't think there was any confusion about it.
Uh-huh.
But I just said, and sometimes I just want to kill myself. And the person said, and sometimes you just want to kill yourself. And it was like, it was so great because they didn't say, excuse me, I'm calling 911.
Right.
They're really, I was trusted to handle. Uh-huh. I was adequate to what was going on with me. And also the whole context, I wasn't depressed. I was frustrated. So, but I just remember how important it was for me that person didn't gasp or get out of shape like a friend might.
Right, yeah, a friend who was trying to help you.
Right, in a different. So I think it's just really being with what the person is.
Yeah.
Where the person is.
Yeah, being where the person is, trusting their adequacy is what I hear you saying in that. Reflecting what they're saying rather than taking it on or feeling like you need to do something about it or leading or
leading
any
on.
Of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
I love both sides of reflective listening, and when I am reflecting, I think what I love most is, as we were talking before about having to drop judgment, having to drop filters, and also have to drop forecasts, and have to drop relating, and have to drop all the things that you do in normal conversation.
Yeah.
The nice thing is when you step out of those to do the reflecting, they fall in a pile next to you, and you can see them.
Uh-huh.
You can actually pick them up and say, wow, I do that, and I do that, and I do that, because you're not allowed to. So I love that about the reflecting. And on the other side, when I'm speaking and being reflected, it's almost not even the time when I'm hearing it back from the other person, But the fact that there's another live person that I'm talking to, let me see, there's two extremes. I could do this by myself, but that doesn't work so well for me because I tend to cheat. I tend to kind of gloss over the parts I don't really want to look at. You know? And I could do it with somebody that I need to relate to, uh-huh. a significant other or something, but then every word I say, I'm constantly not only going through my process, but also figuring out how it's going to affect that person and our relationship and everything else.
Right.
So having a real human that I don't need to relate to is just exactly right in between in a good way, because uh-huh. I need to articulate it so that somebody can hear it, say it back, so I can't skip things.
Right.
But I don't have to worry about what that person thinks or what that person thinks of me or what I'm trying to convince them of or none of that.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about any kind of relationship in that way to get in between what you have to say.
Yeah, I don't have to affect them.
Right, yeah, you know how you can get your self-consciousness about them out of the way, and so you can just say what it is that you need to say and have that reflected.
Yeah, and so it's great. So that's when I really hear it. And then hearing it back in their voice is kind of icing on the cake. Mm-hmm. Most of the cake is in having to put it together to give to them in the first place. Really. Uh-huh.
Thank you. Let's see. Maybe we can work on the drawing out.
Sure.
I think that would be really fun. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure we don't miss the fun parts too. So, well, drawing out. What is it? I'm not going to start it. What do you got to say? What is drawing out? Melinda.
Was there more to your question?
You're trying to be smart. Was there more to your question? That's very good. Do anyone else? Anyone else? Michael.
To me, it's. I was just thinking about the kind of intent behind it, and it's like a kind of a curiosity about this wonderfully interesting person and kind of who they are and how they are. Uh-huh. You know, when it comes from that place. It seems like it's really helpful and inviting, you know, kind of without an agenda. Uh-huh. But this is just, oh, this is a wonderfully interesting person. And uh-huh. How do they work?
How do they work? Uh-huh. Without an agenda, I hear you say.
So that's just kind of that genuine curiosity and interest in caring for, as we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm. Penny.
So I'm just picturing doing that or having it done then. It feels also like it's sort of saying, is there another piece of this, or is there another step in this that you'd be interested in looking at? Huh. I mean, this feels like it's like an invitation, actually. I'm thinking about when I've been drawn out, or occasionally in facilitation, I think when I ask a question, and it feels like, you know, there might be another piece. And sometimes the person says no.
Right.
But that's what it feels like. Is there another piece or another step that you would be interested in looking at, or that you see that you haven't quite said yet? But mm-hmm. it's sort of what I realize is it's sort of an intuitive thing that maybe that's there.
Yeah.
And you kind of explore, is it there?
Yeah. So you're kind of like looking at it and it's like, is there really something there? So just asking them if that's so.
Which is different. I mean, what I see in the danger of it is that I think I know what's there.
Right.
That would be the danger.
Yeah.
So are you going to get to where I think you ought to get to?
Have you seen, by the way?
Have you seen what I see?
Yeah.
Have you seen what I see? If, that's truly, if truly you just have a sense that there's something more there and you really don't know what it is, uh-huh. I guess, what's coming up for me is it's simply an invitation.
It's simply an invitation.
If somebody cares to look further at mm-hmm. something. And then they'll present whatever they present. And I don't really know what it is.
Uh-huh.
Mm. Phil? Well, what I was going to say, too, is it what it's not is it's not leading the witness.
Not leading the witness.
And that's important. Mm-hmm. That's part of that. I would think that the agenda or that I might have and trying to lead someone somewhere.
And like you see where they need to be, and so what you're going to do is kind of
guide them there.
Guide them over there with the leading question.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But, and it is just, I like that word, that invitation, or, you know, just, you know, like, is there another step? Is there something behind that or whatever? Yeah. You know, just to, an invitation. That's the best word.
Yeah, an invitation. Like, you know, I hear sometimes folks say, is there more? Yeah. You know, just it's a drawing out question.
Right.
You know, it's always whatever it is that they're talking about, mm-hmm. and bringing that forward or moving that in whatever direction that they choose to go in, mm-hmm. rather than have you thought about seeking therapy, which is leading a little.
I love the box thing.
The box thing. Would you say more?
I said I was hoping to get you spark.
Spark.
Yeah, you were speaking so eloquently to it. But, you know, so there's the box, right?
Uh-huh.
And so the box being the subject that the uh-huh. person has brought up.
Right, so someone
you're facilitating me, and I put this, metaphorically, I put this box in the middle of the room.
Okay.
And then, you know, there are all kinds of questions around that to kind of explore the box.
Uh-huh.
But then, you know, so as a facilitator, you might say, you know, so tell me about the left side of the box and the right side. But you wouldn't say things like, you know, I wonder if you put a purple dragon on top of the box, what that might look like.
Or, uh-huh.
you know, add the... So it's really like, really sticking with what the person has presented.
Yes.
And that's the material.
Mm-hmm. That's what we're working with.
Mm-hmm.
That so I would mention the bow on the box.
Right.
If they didn't say that it had a bow.
Right, exactly.
You know, like...
Yeah, that's a good... Like, exactly. That's a good one. Like, well, is there a bow on the box? That's not a drawing out.
That's
right?
Not a drawing out. That's just what's interesting to me.
But
it's like asking, do you have a significant other?
But I say, there's this bow in the box and blah blah blah, and I'm talking about all kinds. And you might say, tell me more about the bow.
Exactly. Right. They talk about the, you know, the bow or the significant other, and then we start with that. So what's that like?
Which is, you know, it's a version actually. One of the things I just realized we didn't mention when we were looking at reflective listening is that thing that someone mentioned a couple days ago of, so tell this big long story about the downtown with the Taito and the Uncle Sam and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And in the middle of it, you know, breeze passed, you know, and I felt like so frustrated, blah, 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 blah. So tell me more about the frustration.
Uh-huh.
Or, you know, in some way, or is there more about, or, you know, in some way reflecting, you know, a piece of it that feels like where there was really, you know.
Yeah.
Again, it's tricky because, you know, we're only projecting what we're seeing, but if we're really sticking with what the person has brought into it.
Exactly.
Instead of, you know, I didn't mention frustration, you say, well, it really sounds like you were frustrated.
Yeah, that's getting back to like that you're just interpreting, projecting what you think their experience was like in that, and that's just, well, no, I didn't. You know, and again, we get instant feedback. You know, like someone else said it, you know,
I wasn't frustrated.
I wasn't frustrated.
Yeah.
I was a little annoyed. Yeah. But, and then you go, no, well, tell me about the annoying. But you know what I mean? It's like, it's because that's what they put in front of you.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so it's really just working with the material that's already in the room.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Phil.
That was very helpful. And I remember a facilitation retreat, it was a long time ago though, where we took turns, we did a lot of reflective listening, and then Sherry had us do, I think, practice what wasn't drawing out. And I remember we were to this, you know, talk, and then the facilitator, most all of you were here, asked questions, and it was like, so you just stop and you can go anymore. So it would be like, what color was that bow? You know, it's like, completely, you know, on a track, and then having to stop and go back. I remember that so vividly because it was so helpful.
Uh-huh.
And it just is so annoying. Because then you lose your whole train of thought. You know, you
right.
lose where you are. And
right. It's and, basically what we do out in the world, you know. We,
yeah, which is, and it's like, then they pick up from there.
Right.
You never get to finish what you were saying, usually.
Yeah.
But that's... so yeah, that conversation and that example of what we did that time together is very helpful for me.
Well, we're going to have an experience of trying out the drawing out. That's what we're going to do next. We're going to pair up, and we're going to practice drawing out. So someone's going to be talking, you know, choose who's going to talk, and then we're going to just throw in a drawing out question. So instead of reflecting like we've been doing, we're going to be drawing out. So... we get to practice that.
Mm-hmm.
Sound fun?
Yes.
So, yes, Dave.
I wondered we might just to prepare some kind of stock questions.
Yes. Yeah.
So, well, my personal favorite is interesting.
Interesting.
Then maybe other people throw something.
Yeah. What else?
Is there more?
Is there more? Ann.
Or tell me more about that.
Tell me more about that. Anything else?
That was a good one.
That was I'm just natural. All right. So go for it. Yes.
I have a question though. All right, so we're going to be reflective listening and drawing out, or
just drawing out.
Oh,
yeah. So instead of reflective listening, you're going to be drawing.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I'm just so used to reflecting now. So anyway, go find somebody. All right. Sadie's going to go first, and he's going to go second, unless you already have.
Is there more?
So I realized that I said my thing that I wanted to say, and then I kind of realized I needed to kind of end it, because you know, you need to finish. And so I just sort of said something that I thought was just off the cuff, kind of to tie it up. And that's, of course, what I was drawn out about. And it turned out there was a lot to it.
Huh.
So it was really nice to be drawn out in that way. I saw a whole thing, I saw the whole side of my box I'd never looked at.
Yeah.
And that was my box.
Wow, yeah. You put out the box thinking that you knew something about the box, and what happened is that you just threw out this comment and there was something else that you hadn't seen about the box. Is there more?
No.
Michael, I'm going back to Karen.
I'm just noticing what a joy and pleasure it is to have someone who's genuinely interested in who I am and what I have to say, and, you know, without an agenda. It's just really pleasure.
Yeah. It is.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, as we've been talking about, kind of rare.
Yeah. Cool. You have all things considered.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. Thank you. Karen.
I appreciate having somebody draw me out and ask more because I just appreciate that because I need that. I need
it. Sure.
It just... it really is an invitation to go deeper and to look more and to see more.
Yeah, yeah, you appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's an invitation for you to look deeper.
It feels like a kindness.
A kindness.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything specific about that?
let's see. I think I'm basically, there's a part of me that's very shy, very quiet, and, but really wants to be there, and wants to be seen and heard, and that's what that feels like.
Yeah, that's what that feels like.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a little shy part.
Mm-hmm.
And wants to be seen and heard, and drawing out allows that part to look a little deeper at that part.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's quick.
Yeah, I think drawing out is like a shy person's dream. Yeah, it was just interesting to watch that whole thing. When I went to share, I couldn't think of anything to say. You know, and if you're just being reflected, it gets to be really painful.
I don't know what I'm going to say next.
You know, to just have somebody sit, you know, sit there in silence with you, but to have the facilitator say, and how is that to have nothing to say? Uh-huh. You know, it just sparked, it just opened a door for insights that I wouldn't even thought, things I would not have even thought about talking about.
Yeah.
You know, and it was wonderful.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it used exactly what you had said, or what was going on for you.
Right.
You know, and it used that as a springboard.
Exactly.
The next thing that you... Yeah, I could just totally see how that would open a door for you.
Yeah, and it was, like I think somebody said earlier, you know, it just was an invitation to go deeper.
Yeah.
Than I get with just doing the, you know, straight thing. So I could see how it could be a skill used by a more advanced facilitator. Uh-huh. You know?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
That was great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Jen?
I just thought that's really fun, because something just came through is it would be kind of fun to hear what people use to, you know, what are some drawing out kinds of things that people have tried out that work. It just would be nice to have those.
It would be fun. I thought of one just as Sequoia was saying, and that's something that I've heard us say before, is like, what if you did know? You know, someone says, I don't know. But it's like, it because of that kind of like, it throws it into the realm of like the going past the conditioning to go to see what is behind that. Mm. And it opens a door that was invisible to the person before that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I don't know if that makes sense, but that was coming in for me. But what do other folks have about that? Any of your favorites or any that you used when you were drawing out? Phil?
Well, I kind of did it the way Jen was talking about the box, and it was really easy, you know, like, but I should check to see if it seemed like I was really drawn out. Because I'd use a word, like she would say something, and it would be like seemed like a key phrase, and just ask something like, well, could you, that sounds really important to you, is that something you want to talk about more? I don't remember how I said it, but it was like using one of the things she said to draw her out with.
Yeah.
And it seemed to flow fairly smoothly.
Huh.
Which, well, I was surprised. I'm with the in the drawing out club. Maybe we need a drawing out buddy. You know, in my life, I sit and listen to everybody. I realize they don't really have too much interest in what I have to say, and so I just have less and less to say.
You just need to be drawn out.
I have a projection that what people are responding to is it's just really clean, what we just did. As a technique, you know?
Yeah.
Because I think that's what produces off that kind of energy and that kind of feeling good and, like, you know, people were just talking about. And, that was really interesting to me in what we did, is that as a, like, you know, normally we talk about reflective listening as kind of like the baseline. And I think it is. I think it needs to be for all of us, because that's our best chance at actually being present and kind of knowing when we're not present, because if you're reflecting, you got to be present to hear what the other person's saying.
Right.
And we're starting to get into drawing and clarifying, and there starts to be an opening for an agenda that's hard to see.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I'm just really taking that awareness for myself, and hoping other people will too. You know, opening the door for this other kind of way of working with someone. also opens the door to conditioning, to agendas that are hidden, and it's subtle too. I was, you know, I was watching myself. It was kind of a hoot. I mean, I really enjoyed the. It was fun doing the thing, you know, cause, especially because you just have, you know, you only have that one thing you can do. That was really cool. that was really challenging and fun. But I also noticed, you know, it's how easy it would be for something to come in and be directing, you know, or it'd be something other, something unclean.
Yeah.
That would not really take people to a place that's more, that's deeper or more expansive for them. But we just divert their attention to some, like you were saying, to something that interests me.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I hear you saying about that. That's what makes it clean. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably what all the energy was produced in, is that everybody is really grounded in that kind of reflective listening, or at least knows about what it is that we're doing with that.
Yeah,
and
well, also practicing we're doing an exercise. And so it's, you know, but so anyway, I'm hoping that as we explore this, and I hope we have time to explore drawing out too before the week's over, because I think that would be really fun the same way. You know, that we all remember that, you know, well, in a way, it relates back to not damaging the Dharma.
Uh-huh.
You know, that we, you know, it's a tool. And like anything else, that's kind of like money. You know, money can be used to produce great, amazing things, and be used to produce all kinds of suffering and misery.
Yeah.
You know, something like, you know, these reflective listening tools are really powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And we just have to remember to be really paying attention to what we're bringing to them and keep them as clean as we can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. Rebecca?
Well, that brings up a question. You know, if because I did kind of what Phil was describing, where I kind of asked a question about a word that felt central. But even that, I was picking what sounded central. So mm-hmm. even that feels a little directive
uh-huh.
in its very nature, you know.
Because why that word?
Why? And who thought that sounded kind of central,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Uh-huh.
So I asked that drawing out question, I kind of, in the back of my mind, was even wondering, well, now am I getting her off track because I chose that word? Or, you know, is she going there because that's where I was sitting, you know, saying
yeah.
go?
Yeah.
You know, so I really see what Dave's point, that it's just, just in doing that little bitty thing, you just are opening it up to, well, look at this, you know, and I don't know.
Yeah, that just reminds me. I've heard about that. There was like a description of a drawing out. It's like someone is telling this, you know, whatever, relating a particular thing that's going on for them, and they mentioned something about Costa Rica or something like that. And I happen to be interested in Costa Rica, and so I say, "So what was it like in Costa Rica?" And meanwhile, they're talking about, you know, breaking up with, you know, someone or whatever.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, that's the example that stuck out in my mind when you brought that up was, you know.
Yeah, and I don't know. I guess the answer seems to be I don't know. You know, if that's happening or not. But.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just going to be interesting to pay attention to see, you know, what comes up for us as we facilitate. I mean, that's what's always going on as we're sitting on the cushion too. It's part of that static we were looking at this morning. You know, who is it that's showing up and what is it? And that's part of what we're paying attention to as we're doing it, I think.
Well, and the feedback isn't quite as immediate because, I mean, it could just be that Cameron's just a really nice person and is willing to go wherever I say, oh, okay, you want to talk about this? Fine. You know, so I don't know. But that, you know, and we may be facilitating people that would just kind of go wherever.
Uh-huh.
You know, so the feedback isn't quite as immediate as just with reflective listening.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just not that safety latch in place.
Yeah, definitely. Yes. All right.
Then I'm interested in what are, I think you asked the question, what are some of the sort of buzz questions that we could say?
Uh-huh.
And like, is there more seems to be less of a lead. I'm just asking, is there more?
Yeah.
And then the person would then say yes or no.
Yes or no, right.
Give more or less.
That's pretty clean.
And
yeah.
so I'm actually interested to know any other questions like that.
Well, I think Jen put that question out to folks. I was wondering if anybody else had any kind of questions, that those little lead questions. David.
Well, I have one that I learned from being here in group and listening to other facilitators use, and I always really enjoyed it. It was, what is there more? You know, just kind of in a very inviting way. Uh-huh. And much to my kind of shock and horror and dismay, I got feedback one time from somebody in my group who decided to email in and had said, every time you say that, I feel like I need to shut up and stop saying, you know, I'm saying kind of like, are you finished already?
You do go on.
Yeah. Huh. And that's it. It's that... so, I mean, I still really enjoy it. I think every time that somebody has used that with me, or I've seen it, you know, demonstrated with other people, you know, I just find it such an incredibly kind, kind of a kind offering. You know, it's like somebody gets to that point where, or at least I project when there's a facilitation going on, and there's probably more to come up. It's like right there, the facilitator doesn't necessarily know exactly what it is, but there's just that, it's just kind of something there.
Something there, yeah.
Yeah. And it's just that kind of, you know, that question comes in, and but for whatever reason, this one person decided to kind of take it in the exact opposite way. Right. So, that was one that came up for me with Estandra.
Ian?
Well, I was thinking one, and I thought, well, no, that's more clarifying. Because I was just thinking of an example from our small group yesterday when I was facilitating, and somebody was talking about something that was really frustrating, and I said, I don't know how I asked it, but I was interested, so I said, uh-huh. What about that is frustrating? Or I asked uh-huh. about the frustration.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't. That might be clarifying. But maybe it's drawing out. Who cares?
Well, just an idea. You know, it's getting kind of late, but when we get to the clarifying, you know, we might get out the whiteboard mm-hmm. and write up some good drawing out questions and some good clarifying questions. I think that might clarify. Yeah.
very good.
Yeah. Back to the, whatever we want to call that, focusing on one word technique or response as a facilitator, it seems to me, it seems to me that sometimes there's one energy, one word or phrase that has a different quality of energy to it mm-hmm. in a flow of a narrative. And that somehow it pulls my attention to it. Uh-huh. And it seems, then I have to check out, you know, is your attention there too? You know, sort of, uh-huh. you know, it's like, I guess to use the analogy, you've mentioned a box here.
Right.
And then let's talk about the box. It's almost like a key, like a nexus. And everything sort of leads into that, and it's almost like the center of a web or something. And just there's something about that stands out.
Yeah.
You know, either a drop in energy or an increase in energy, and it seems valuable to use that as a focus for an invitation to draw.
Yeah.
Now, the phrase like "tell me more about that," and you know, it's really directive. But it seems like a lot of facilitators have been using that, and it seems, from what I've seen, it looks like it works.
Yeah. Well, that's you'll find out, right? I mean, but you're saying that you're looking at the where the energy is and what they're saying, you know. So if they keep mentioning, say, something like, you know, if I'm following what you're saying, is that, you know, so they keep saying the word weird over and over again in what they're talking about, maybe. Weird would be the thing to... Maybe that's the box they wanted to look at. You know what I mean?
Yeah, or it could be one using the word weird once.
Yes, just sort of but in that particular way, right? Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Is there more?
That's it.
Thank you. Jan?
I just want to mention, you know, there's a sheet that I found terrifically helpful from years back. Mm-hmm. And it has reflective listening, the drawing out and clarifying, just on one sheet. Mm-hmm. And it gives just some lead-ins that I think help me to you know, do my best at being clean with it. Mm-hmm. You know, so maybe that would be something.
To find the sheet.
I had it at home.
Oh. That's what I wanted.
Yeah, it's very, very helpful.
Okay. I'm noticing our time. Perhaps we call it a night. All right. Thank you.
And it sounds like that ability to stay here as it's going on, just like other people have described this morning, so this really deep thing that feels really real and true, and that goes on, and through practice there's the ability to stay with it, and I move into the position of being able to facilitate that person, and that's what allows me to actually stay in the game. That allows you to stay here, you know, both physically and, you know, with your attention, and then it has you put your hands up and keep participating. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I actually did put my hands up at the end of that actual group, and then I got slammed with that for participating. Because it's either, the story is either, or you know, I was just told I'm totally off the topic.
Should we check the topic again? I'm pretty sure we're right on it.
Because I'm not talking about being a facilitator.
You're not?
at least on the cushion in the front room. So I suppose I'm talking about the internal process of self-facilitating.
Which, if I'm not mistaken, was the topic of the morning.
So the stories are either I'm the energy vampire or I have nothing good to say, nothing articulate or insightful, or that's a contribution, and that will just be stupid, basically. And so something occurred to me to say, and I chimed in, and then that was the stupid thing to say.
Of course. I mean, of course. You know, it might, I just had this image of, you know, so something arises to say, and I'm going to put my hands up, and just a quick little check-in to go, okay, what we can know is that after this, the voices are going to say, that was a really stupid thing to say. That way, when they do that, we can know it had nothing to do with what I said, because I already know what I was going to say. I didn't even know what I was going to say.
So that whole separation from the group is just big.
It's big. Yeah.
It's big for being a part of participating group and being on the There's someone who really wants to be a part of this group.
Yeah. There's a lot of commitment and momentum here. And it really, it benefits all of us hugely that this many people are willing to show up at this level of practice. You know, we, yeah, it's huge for all of us. Yeah.
It's feeling like not sure how to say it, but assisting that person to be a part of the group.
Yeah. Could you even say facilitating?
And not doing that comparing.
Yeah.
Because that that happens quite frequently where that can even be what people are saying is resonating, but I can't say it.
Right.
Those words don't fit together and come out of my mouth and articulate in some form. And then sort of to on the topic of being the facilitator and having that feeling of separation going on. I feel this this whole process going on of not wanting to be a person on the cushion, wanting to just be present to the group, to the person facilitating, and having the conversation, and realizing there's someone here who's really nervous about this.
Nervous to be on the cushion.
Afraid they're not going to remember what the person shared.
Yep.
Not be able to reflect.
Yep.
And then having judgment about that. And so what I've done is offer reassurances. However, what I've found is that while it sort of helped me survive that experience, it also feels like it's dropping my attention to away from the person, away from the group, because I've got this, it's okay, you can do this going on.
So there are a bunch of things in that, and I think I can't remember if it's tonight or tomorrow that point about remembering everything and being able to reflect off of that, I think we're going to address that directly at some point. And when my intuition was right on, I was thinking we might need a break after when we end this, and I think that might have been true. And then there was another point, and then I was thinking maybe in a second we would take a kind of fluffing or a kind of break thing, and then maybe come back to some of the particulars of, you know, looking at that, the post and pre kinds of stuff, because that's really what you're talking about. And maybe people could share their tips on that.
Yeah, I would like to hear tips.
Great. All right, so should we stand up and grab it all out?
Thank you. Thoughts, tips on before, during, and after facilitation. I'll try not to neglect this side of the room this time. Dave.
This is a fun, really fun topic for some reason. For me, what I do is keep the attention engaged. And especially if like there's like a big thing coming up, like a big retreat or something.
Mm-hmm.
And something I've noticed is that I can't remember actually how it was in the beginning, but it might have been exposed at the beginning, but the facilitator always shows up in time.
Yeah.
And so you don't have to really worry. Mm-hmm. You know, usually actually somebody very different from the facilitator is there before the
getting ready.
Yeah. And I have the. Well, I remember Stinker the first time I ever saw it, but it's become my experience since then. That was actually, it was, you know, a Saturday, DMW's getting ready to start, very threatening situation for my conditioning. Mm-hmm. This was years ago. Mm-hmm. And I'm down by the hot shower. I think I might have been cleaning them, even. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah. I just felt, you know, in the end, sort of a, not a panic, but just a nervous, kind of thing about it. And just it's like it just came from somewhere and mm-hmm. just settled in. Mm-hmm. Just, thank God the facilitator's here. Mm-hmm. And another time is I have all these little rituals. People probably do this. It's the equivalent of, you know, you tap your shoes 3 times and spit before you go swing. And it's funny, I don't like to do this anymore, but it used to be that before the first night of the retreat, I would always go in the same bathroom back there to change my clothes, put on my facilitator clothes. Is that me?
Where superstition meets Zen practice.
Well, there's something about it that helps.
Yeah.
It's really like a thing to do.
Which one is it?
I think what you're pointing at is that so the facilitator is going to facilitate, ideally. And there are all these other parts of you who are having all kinds of things go on around about that.
Mm-hmm.
And that there are ways to kind of care for those parts of myself. Mm-hmm. Even though they're not going to be facilitating, mm-hmm. it's actually really crucial that we turn our attention to them and care for them in ways, because then they don't need to facilitate.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the biggest way is just keeping the attention engaged. Not allowing, I would never sit on the porch for an hour. Before a big facilitation experience. I would do that.
Just ponder that. Yeah.
But, to be doing stuff, and not to be hurrying or not trying to get anything done, but just, Sherry talks about it as, actually I can't remember what word she used, the word I use is fiddle, fiddling. Mm-hmm. Just doing stuff. Just kind of putting, just attending what needs to be attended to.
Yeah.
Just because it gives something to put the energy into.
Yeah, it gives something to put the energy into that's in the present moment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exercise, I think, is an excellent thing mm-hmm. for it, because it helps mm-hmm. that energy move mm-hmm. Stuff like that.
And what people have talked about of that kind of nervousness is something that, facilitators, when we're facilitating, there's nothing wrong with you, we talk a lot about that. Just mm-hmm. And it can feel like, oh God, I'm so nervous, and yet really it's just the energy building, getting ready for this big thing.
Sherry said something to me one time that really, really helped with that, because it's just, it's just like the typical is Saturday night, everybody arrives. Sunday morning, you've got all night, and you haven't really got started.
Right, you're not really in the saddle yet.
Yeah, exactly. And there's all that space and mm-hmm. just this energy. And what she said to me at one point a while back is, it's just that you don't know yet how to hold that mm-hmm. amount of energy in your body. Yeah. And just to recognize that's the energy that's arising to meet the situation that you're going into.
Yeah.
And that as soon as you're there, it will have the thing there that it's kind of like a gear.
Exactly.
If a gear is not engaged, it'll just spin.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if it gets engaged, then, that, and that's very much been my experience.
Yeah.
And it really helps because it takes away the anxiety of, oh God, I'm not the right person.
Right.
I can't sit on the cushion like this.
I'm completely nervous. Why am I so,
mm-hmm. And during's less of a problem, mm-hmm. usually, but a couple things I do, I hold something in my hand a lot of times,
mm-hmm.
like my finger,
mm-hmm.
And as a place to put my attention,
mm-hmm.
because it's here,
mm-hmm.
basically, and so I just be checking in with that, am I, just like that, and then often in between interactions, I'll check in with my heart,
mm-hmm.
And just so, because we will have been engaged, and there's this little thing where the attention comes back here before going out to the next person.
Yeah.
And it comes back here to the heart.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to do anything there other than just, or maybe I'll just take a deep breath, mm-hmm. and now,
Yeah.
And there's a little, because there's time for that, there's a little space right there.
Yeah, it's such an interesting thing, when we were looking at with Amy, that place of reassuring,
mm-hmm.
Self-talk gets kicked up and, this is not going well. I don't know what to do here. I don't understand what they're saying,
and doing that reassurance. And it's such, I'm not sure I can put words to it, but it's such an interesting place of being able to hold this being while still have the attention be in the facilitation.
Yeah. And you know, as far as experiences, conditioning, launching an attack while on the cushion, to me, the very best thing in the whole world is reflective listening.
Yeah.
Just going back to that. I mean, and that's true. We'll talk about that more, but that really needs to be a foundation for everyone,
yeah.
Facilitation. But
yeah.
Particularly, you notice yourself getting distracted, that's the way to get back.
Yeah.
And that's also the way to kind of prevent the unfortunate things that you're going to regret later.
Right.
You know? Yeah. You're just reflecting back. It's very safe. It's very inverse. It's not like it's a lesser than kind of thing. Even me, it really works.
Yeah.
And it helps just bring the pull the attention back from whatever self-hatred's there.
Yeah, and again, I think later on we're going to be talking more about the particulars of doing that. And so there I am. You know, there's a lot challenging going on inside myself. That's not going to be a time maybe when I remember every single word that the person just said to me. So how am I supposed to reflect? But it's not necessary to remember every single word the person said to you.
Right.
There's all kinds of ways to reflect without that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then for the post, is this, you know, this has changed my life, you know, in this month, that was many, many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Just reviews.
Yeah.
That has to be the policy. It's no reviews policy.
Yeah.
You know, just walk out and never think about it again.
Yeah. Yeah, the never think about it again is a little challenging, right? Because conditioning tends to be on its own program.
Mm-hmm.
But that, again, setting the intention of, but I'm not going to engage with that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to give that my attention.
Right. Well, and it can definitely be done, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could just walk out and that never happened.
Yeah.
And it's funny because it's different from, it's not closing the door to the insights there.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just, you know, it's funny because there's just a really bizarre thing that happens where we joke about it as facilitators. Somebody will come, you know, we'll have a group of 8 people here on TNW, and I mean, it's a very intimate thing. And you, by the time they walk out of here, you know everything there is to know about these people. And then 3 days later, you can't remember their name. and I think that's from our training. It's like, okay, done.
Yeah.
Attention comes back here, and we're doing practice. I changed my role. Basically, the facilitator goes where the facilitator goes, and he's not around. Because he's the one who probably would remember. And then, but it's good because
without the chainsaw, like someone was talking about before,
Exactly. It's
time to on to the next thing.
Yeah, okay, where's the attention need to be now?
Yeah.
Not allowing attention just kind of, and that's just a basic life skill. Not allowing attention just to wander around because it'll always land on something unpleasant if it's not being directed consciously.
And I don't think you said this explicitly, but implied in what you're saying is no reviews, period. So also, the, boy, that was like, that's the best I've ever done. All that is just self-hate opening the door, getting you to join the conversation. Because if you watch, and actually I had to prove that to myself. I remember Sherry talking about, not particularly about facilitation, but Sherry talking about that every conversation ends in a train wreck. And I got really interested in that. Is that really true? And watching how, you know, something really fun, positive, interesting, you know, starts, and then if you follow it, sure enough, it's going to end in, you piece of...
And it really is clear for facilitation, too, because that's not generally going on the session.
Right.
And so you walk out, and then it immediately will start up, so it's really clear that it's it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I didn't have to have too many experiences of, hey, that was great. And then go around a corner and just get clobbered to know that I can't go to either place.
And I'm just realizing as you're saying that really the habit becomes, the no reviews becomes the habit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we really can't train ourselves that way. I mean, I don't know if, you know, other senior facilitators can speak to that, but that is, I mean, that's it. There's no talking back about, I mean, I can remember being early on, just going through each, hashing out the details and with that and that, and just letting it go. Just completely, as you say, it didn't even happen.
Yeah, and the nice thing about it is it completes the circle, because then that provides a safety for the next time. Because I've had the experience that that's possible, and I didn't get beat up. I can remember one time, it was, I don't know, a couple, three TNWs into it or something, having guidance from Sherry and saying, you know, I don't think I had any self-hate. And it was such a huge, it's like, wow, I did not even know that was possible in this lifetime. And Because before that, I was just like getting creamed. And after that, too, to be honest. You know,
yeah, sure.
In between groups all night long, getting creamed, getting just ripped apart.
Yeah.
And then just discovering that that's actually possible, walking out and being completely okay, almost as if you're not facilitating.
Yeah.
In between those times, you just walk back in. Facilitator's there. Facilitator does what he or she does.
Yep.
Walk out. Then the person's there who's got to be washing the dishes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Whatever, you know, has to be done.
Yeah, that's great. Yes, Karen.
I'm thinking about what was just said, and it seems like for me there's kind of some energy in the body or sensations that may not feel too great.
That may not feel too great.
Yeah, or. Or there's some real energy there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just wondering about that now, sort of.
You're talking about before you facilitate?
Or after.
Or after.
After, mm-hmm. really. I don't have time to think about it before because I just come home from work and boom.
Mm-hmm.
But after.
There's some energy there that feels uncomfortable.
And I heard from the retreat last year about the no reviews, so I've really tried not to do that and just let those sensations be there, or go swimming or go do something.
Yeah.
Just let it sort of disperse.
Yeah.
And then I'm thinking that, you know, what would be the more pleasant energy, the real, you know, it feels like, okay, you know, I mean, is that with the facilitators, and it is my experience. I'm just wondering for other people what they, because to just, I'm trying to envision walking out and not having that.
Right, yeah. And I don't know if this is what you're pointing at, but it's a practice that it may not immediately be. That's why I said when Dave said, you know, don't think about it ever again after you walk out. Well, it's like don't think about the pink elephant in the room, right? I mean, we don't seem to have a lot of control, if you will, over what thoughts pass through, but we do have choices about how we engage with it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like that's what you're practicing, is that you finish facilitating and there's still some energy in the body, and that you're looking for ways like going swimming, things that actually support the being.
Or it could just be really energetic dishwashing.
Exactly. Exactly. Alex.
Yes, I love this topic. I think that it has application all throughout, like, my day.
Yeah.
Like, I watch how, you know, not rehashing the argument or the disagreement, in some cases, you know, that I may have with someone could, is really great practice for this as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just not going over. Because I know this, I know what goes along with it.
Yeah.
You know, it's a particular... It all it needs is a foot in the door,
right?
Really, and it will start going through everything.
So dropping conversation, period.
Dropping conversation, period. Yeah, that would be a really great place to start now when you're off the cushion.
Right.
You know, like I think every moment is, but that is really that's been the place that I've been practicing with.
Yeah.
And I find that that's helpful when I'm facilitating as well. I even do it like after I have I share in group. That never happened either. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
that's a good point. Yeah.
Because, you know, that's why facilitating in life is just like the best.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm taking everything that I'm learning
mm-hmm.
and I'm just applying it everywhere.
Yeah.
So let me see. I was looking back at my own experience with it, and the biggest ones were, I'm asked to facilitate. There's a sit before the facilitation. Yeah. Well, you know, you add the guide coming in.
Right.
You know, and the morning, be listening.
Second time you've ever facilitated.
Exactly. So just to put it in the context.
Takes me right back.
I mean, it's just like, it's so funny what we'll try to commit. It's like, what did that person say then? And so trying to memorize like what the phrasing is going to be. And if that person says, I know, you know, it's
here's the story I can tell about them.
Yes, exactly. Or there's a sense in the room, like I sense in the room that someone's going to bring up this issue. what would the Buddha say? And it's just so not helpful.
There's a good voices cartoon in there. Setting them up.
It's such a big setup. And I think all we can do is keep showing up and keep applying the, you know, drop it. I mean, that's what the gift in this all, the whole thing is. It's just like pushing the eject button for the invader. Who's just going to try to keep getting in the seat.
Yeah. The skill to be able to drop it, I mean, that'll transform an entire life.
Because when that gets dropped, that just allows what's actually here to be here. Yeah. And that's why there's nothing really to learn or to or to accomplish or to do.
Yeah.
It's funny because that all that energy is constantly moving. It feels like it's constantly moving through me, and every time this comes in, it's just either a cap or it's a diversion.
It's like Dave was saying earlier, you know, in terms of, you know, what I've learned about being on the cushion, well, not that much, because there's not that much to say about it. There's not that much to learn. It's just like what we're doing in practice, in Buddhism, which is we're stripping away what gets put on top of it.
Yes.
Because when all of that is stripped away, there's really nothing to learn or to do on the cushion. There's just, like we were talking about before, there's just, okay, I'll hold the space right now.
Yeah, I'll hold the space.
It's complete by itself. There's nothing I need to do.
Yeah, and I don't know what's going to happen next.
Right.
And so how can I plan for that? Right. You know, it's spontaneous, premeditated spontaneity, that's what you should call it.
And conditioning hates that. You know, that wanting to plan to make sure that I can, so that I have the right answer, so that I
end
in facilitating. I mean, we have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, what should we look at tonight?
That one thing that I'm reminded of is this definition of Zen that says, Zen doesn't drag the last moment into this moment. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're practicing all the time is just leaving the last moment where it is and be in this moment. And that practice is, I think, for me, I'm sure, is what has saved my life over and over again. Yeah. And with regards to facilitation, it's also that paradox too. You know, like we practice diligently. You know, we keep ourselves involved in practice, in the words of practice, in everything about our practice, and that's the only preparation there is.
Right.
Just
attention, practice
in life. Yeah, and yet without that, we wouldn't, you know, I mean, and this is part of it, all these things that we're doing. Without that, we wouldn't be preparing ourselves in that sense. I mean, that is the preparation.
Right.
And so, you know, then we facilitate, and it's just as we've been saying, then we facilitate.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards, it's, you know, we used to say no second thoughts is the... another way of saying no reviews, you know, it's just over and it's done with.
Yep.
And I find I have a lot of energy, but it's good energy, you know. It's afterwards. Mm-hmm. It's I can get stuff done.
Right.
Afterwards.
Oh, cool. Maybe I'll facilitate tonight. I'll get to clean my house.
Exactly. Rather than, you know, I can go in being tired. I can go in being, Marie was saying, you know, not even barely keeping awake. Yeah. And then it's just that experience of being just right there on the cushion the kind of thing I say is just, you know, the intention is to let the universe, you know, come through me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all.
That's it.
And
and then whatever happens, happens. I have no control over it, mm-hmm. in that sense, mm-hmm. and then I'm finished. I can just use this energy that's in
it's
there.
Just,
and
it really is such a good metaphor for life, isn't it? And then I just go back to where I came from and become the, you know.
Yeah, and the results of the energy for till they last, and then it's the next moment in the next moment. And there's nothing really in my life. That's that whole way we live in Zen practice is just the best. It's just what makes life work, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
And it's the refuge. I mean, yeah. that like if in before like the ordinary, you know, the regular groups and stuff. Those are not an issue. Sometimes I have to do what would be akin to probably public speaking, but you know, bigger venues of things, and what I have to do is whenever there's something that's coming up that either is anxiety or whatever, is I do the same thing as I would do on the other end. I use the actual, you know, the there's the beginning of the conversation that, you know, that the, even just that feeling of it, mm-hmm. and that's what I mm-hmm. train myself right. to go to the breath with, just mm-hmm. as after when we say no second right. thoughts, that's easy to say, but when the
right.
where the
so
thought
you
comes.
Use that conversation that wants to kind of get you nervous or whatever it is, you use that as a cue to just remember to come back here.
Yeah, just mm-hmm. even the beginning of it barely yeah. opens its mouth.
Yeah,
because if I let it open its mouth a little
that's
bit, you know,
door,
it's yeah. harder to close the door. Yeah. But just before, while it, you know, like if somebody was going to say, well,
right.
at that point, and the same afterwards, that's how I've learned to have yeah. the no second thoughts, is
right.
use that as the flag
yeah.
for that.
Yeah, thank you. So I better check in with the book and see where we are.
We are headed to the kitchen.
Okay.
At least, I think Michael and I are going to go.
Okay. Do we want to do that, or do we want to just end, or what do we want to do? Should we call it good for now? I'm aware we still haven't gotten too terribly many. We've gotten a few tips out in the room. Anyone else have other like short tips? Because we could just pop around the room, and we don't have time to do a, you know, a bunch of looking with everyone, but we could just pop around and do that. You want to do that? Okay. Mickey.
Just a little pre-one that actually had changed for me since the last facilitator retreat, which is when I'm going to be on the cushion, to dress in a monk-like facilitator way that mm-hmm. does not draw attention to me. So it's one way of getting that eye out of the way.
Yeah.
If I just show up in what I've been wearing during the day, I sometimes realize,
I'm still that person.
But if
yeah,
I take the time
nice.
To say, I'm facilitating tonight,
yeah.
I need to dress a little differently. It's,
yeah.
it's part of the preparation.
That's great. Maybe brush the teeth, brush the hair. Tracy.
You know, this is, it's so funny, at the months of these key groups have been going like 3.5 months or 4 months,
mm-hmm.
and every time I show up, you know, kind of like 15 minutes early, there's that little voice, and it's come every single week going, I hope nobody shows up. And
it's coming what?
I hope nobody shows up.
Oh,
and then I'm sitting there, and the first car drives up, and the automatic reaction is like, oh, good. It's funny. It's like, and it's becoming kind of comical. Like,
yeah.
I just listen to it. And so just a tip, you know, when Sherry, someone told a story about this guy, and Sherry said, oh, isn't he cute?
Yeah.
Like, I thought, oh, like, what a great thing to bring into, like, oh, isn't that voice cute, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like, it's just, like,
yeah.
it's just there,
it's
you
just
know?
There.
I don't do anything about it.
Yeah.
I don't engage it. I don't
yeah.
even really pick, but it just pops.
It's just,
there. The attitude of, like, oh, let's sit.
Isn't
here.
That sweet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's good. Michael.
I have a little stretching routine. Takes 10 or 15 minutes
oh,
and
nice.
Just helps me physically to
yeah.
be on the cushion. And I think just the whole kind of ritual of it is really...
Yeah, yeah, kind of creating the space.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's nice. Yeah, Penny.
Sometimes when I'm facilitating and I can, and a distraction comes in, like a voice comes in to try to distract me, I just really focus on the face. Really focus on that face.
Uh-huh.
If I'm not facilitating someone else, sometimes just focus on the room, you know, or go back to my breath, but just
uh-huh.
really turn attention away. Essentially, it's stop, drop, and breathe.
Yeah, yeah.
Turn attention away.
Yeah.
From the voice, not allow the distraction and refocus on what I'm focused on.
Yeah, bring the attention to something that's actually here in the present moment.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Jan?
Well, sort of piggybacking on what Nikki said and what Philip had said, for me, when the review starts or a criticism, you know, whether I'm just about to facilitate after or just in life, is that for a while it was really difficult to just drop it and not sure it says something needs to come in. And if I mm-hmm. if the breath wasn't, I just wasn't able to do that, then a reassurance. And it just has been... Yeah. So practicing the reassurances on a regular basis.
Yeah, that's a nice point that, you know, sometimes it's really available to me to just drop it, and that's great, but other times not so much. It's almost like something's needed to replace
it. Yeah, it fills the space. I mean, for me, it's really visual, but it just comes in, and it's just like love moving in to get rid of that self-hate.
Fun. Yeah, so kind of like... You know, facilitation ends, and I choose what's going to be the reassurance that I'll bring in to fill that space if needed.
Yeah, and I haven't done that, but being in the habit of having a particular reassurance that's currently my favorite seems to, I don't even think about it.
It just comes in. Yeah.
It's like the mentor's right there, because we've already said we're not going to do that.
What's been really helpful for me is just to remind myself that it's not real serious. And just to be kind of lighthearted about it.
Yeah.
It's so much more fun. You know? Just kind of go with this lightness. And then what helped from the last retreat was just, it's okay to experiment. Mm-hmm. Like to know I might try something and I know I'm going to get immediate feedback and I just can step right back to reflective listening. And so, but it's okay to have that experience to say something and realize it didn't quite work.
Right.
But that's okay.
Yeah. And we've been looking at, too, it would be really supportive to assist people in seeing kind of where am I on in my facilitation practice. And for some people, you know, they know they're going to stick to reflective listening. For other people, they're working on branching out. And so giving yourself permission to, you know, experiment something and then, you know, I'll get the feedback I get. And but knowing ahead of time, setting that intention so that there is the space for me to do that.
Yeah, I'm not going to do anything really crazy. To me, it's like all space that you can just see the minute you lose them. And so it's real helpful, you know, and you just kind of go back to reflective listening. And the other thing is, I think I'm forgetting it. To remind myself that I don't know what's going to happen and I don't know what anything means because I notice the process I do, like, you know, that thing about thinking you'd had a good facilitation and, like, you know, like one night a whole bunch of people came and I'm like, all right, you know, this group's finally going to expand, you know, and it felt like it just went so well. And so the next week, you know, I'm thinking I got to get more cushions and it's like one person came. I mean, it seems like whatever I think about the facilitation and what it's going to mean about whether they come next week is never true.
Yeah.
I mean, when I think they're going to come, they never do. When I think they're never going to come back, they come
every
week.
That
I just don't know what any of it means. And so, you know, to kind of just let go.
Yeah, exactly. You know, conditioning is trying back there trying to make a meaning, but I have no idea, so might as well just let that go.
Catherine. Something I've done after the key group is, someone comes, is self-facilitate on the key reading. And I can do that because it's my living room, so, you know, it's not like a place I have to
go
shut up and go on. But, and I found that gets my mind total. I mean, there's no review there. And often the key is about what is, and we have no control, and, which just helps reinforce no review, and everything's fine.
That's great. It's kind of like Jan was talking about. It takes up the space of what where conditioning will want to come in, but there's no room for it. Thank you. Tony?
One of the things that helps me kind of in between times, I made a facilitator reassurance tape. And I try to listen to it at different times, especially as it gets closer to time for my key group. Yeah, it's been really helpful. And, so, and I'll try, if I can, to also listen to either the facilitator CDs, either from the conference calls or the ones for getting out of the way.
Cool.
It's anytime kind of, I can listen to any even a part of them.
Yeah, it's another kind of putting on the clothing. It's like inviting the facilitator in deliberately.
Yeah, and not just 5 minutes before the group, you know, but to like it more of that as a way of life.
Exactly.
Kind of ongoing ways.
Yeah.
And I've even arranged my schedule so I can be home a little bit before, so I'm not just walking in the door.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to sit, because mine's a key group, it's not a sitting group, so I try to at least sit 5 minutes myself. And I'm sitting there usually praying. It's like, you know, that life lives through me, help me get myself out of the way, you know, and just help.
That's what I'm saying.
Not ruin anybody.
Great. Thank you.
Cameron. It's kind of along with nothing means anything, but not to take anything personally. Something goes on, and if, you know, it looks like maybe somebody's not happy or didn't have a good outcome,
right.
It maybe doesn't really have anything to do with
anything.
Yeah,
that's good. David?
Jim?
Yeah.
You guys keep going. We're going to go help out Alex.
Okay, I think we're probably closing in.
Yeah, just keep on going.
So this, along the same lines as what people have been saying, I noticed more so here at the monastery actually than at home. At home, I'm not quite sure if I have any rituals that I do, but here I've been noticing that both kind of pre and post, I've been just checking in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so on the way up to group, if I'm suspecting, you know, there's going to be an opportunity to facilitate, I'll just kind of check in and be like, okay, you know, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's... And also after, that's really helpful too, kind of like it's like this deal in a way.
Yeah.
It's like I'll be here to begin with.
Yeah.
But don't forget that I'm also going to be here at the other side.
Yeah.
So there's all the, if there's any self-hate going on or whatever, there's still this kind of like little safe zone for whoever might be getting kind of picked on or whatever.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that I have is about a year and a half ago or so, I came up with a paradigm through the Best Year Yet workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And it was you can feel good about yourself no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just such a perfect thing for me to keep in mind, and I often do, kind of like no matter what transpires tonight, you know, so you take a risk and you try something new, whatever is going to go on it, you crash and burn, you have the greatest thing, no matter what you can feel good about yourself.
Yeah.
And it's kind of goes hand in hand with that kind of check-in.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that little safe zone.
Yeah, really proving to yourselves that this is safe.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So,
two things. One thing that Sherry said that's always been helpful for me is we won't hurt anybody and we won't help anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And because everybody does their own work.
Right.
And we're just there facilitating that, regardless. And then the other thing is, it's always good to remember that nobody's going to remember anything you said.
Completely fixated on it.
Yeah.
Else
But they will remember their experience and who, what you're modeling.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's why, even if, in the early days she would tell us, even if you just sit there being present, you know, that's really all that's
all,
required.
That's the whole deal. That's what we're modeling.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Michael?
Before, wash, face.
Before, say it again?
Before, wash my face, my hands.
Uh-huh.
And my feet, if it's summer.
Very good. Can you say why that's helpful for you?
Because I feel clean.
Yeah. I mean, it truly does make a difference. I mean, it's back to the putting the clothing on, and it's supporting the person who's going to be sitting up here in front of the room.
Yeah, and it relaxes me. Doing those things relaxes me, make me feel good.
Yeah, yeah. So. That's great. Ramita.
I have a question about the chimes of going around the group at the end of group. Is that appropriate to talk about here?
Do you mean why do we do that? It's a kind of clearing the space thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we do it at the end of every day, kind of clearing, because there's a lot that happens in this room.
Yeah.
And it's sort of actually along the lines of other rituals people are talking about, of, you know, just making it fresh and new for the next day.
Yeah, I was wondering, because I have my group in my home. And,
To maybe institute that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Another thing is, this is the first time I've seen the Kuan Yin statue here, and I'm just in love with it. And I thought, that would be nice to have. And then I said, that could be good for me as a facilitator to put somewhere I can see as a reminder this is compassion for all.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah. A visual reminder. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
One thing, and this is like maybe a little more for a sitting group, but I've just found it really helpful to make it as much like a monastery as possible. Mm-hmm. To try to recreate, to try to do, like, I'm just following the guidelines at the monastery and to try to set the way the room's set up and everything. Mm-hmm. And I remember years ago when I first went to Chris's group in Asheville, oh my gosh, I walked in there and I felt just like I was at the monastery. And some part of me believed that only existed here, you know? And I walked into that group and I was just like, I was just at the monastery.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
and
here I am in North Carolina.
Yeah, because it was real easy for me to believe I had to come here. I mean, you know, I don't know, it's just helpful to have it. You know, the privileged environment, all the details as much like the monastery as possible.
Yeah, it's kind of the theme of what people are saying is there are all these ways to remind ourselves of, you know, what we're doing and where we want to be and where our attention is. And, all right, very good, thank you.